Welcome again to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is your host, Monk, and you can find out more at my website, allbook-books.com. So, yeah, today, promoting and talking about my new book, which is in the works for about 4 years. It's called Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, Inside Looking Out. And it's a different kind of book. It's multi-layered. So I labeled it, you know, on the back where you see the label, like history, sociology, spirituality, poetry. Well, I wanted to try to do something wide and broad and expand the consciousness in some way, overlay, overlap. So it's titled, it's labeled Poetic Nonfiction, Zen, History, Etymology, study of word roots, workbook, because there are literally suggestions and exercises, things to think about. Spirituality, nonconformist, self-help, and help others. Because I have never seen in a bookstore or anywhere a section called help others. And I think that's part of why the world isn't having problems today. Because it's self-help. You know, obviously if you need help, self-help is helpful. But it's always self-help. Help the self. Help the self. Of course, some books do help others. But so anyway, that's why the various labels. So I wanted to give a little background where the title comes from, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest. It's kind of a riff. For years, I had read and learned a bit about a Zen text that goes back to the 13th century. With various titles, because it's translations. So the one I had heard was The Gateless Gate. And some of the other translations I found are The Empty Gate, The Empty Gate Barrier, and there's a bunch more. So that started my mind turning in a different way. Well, gateless gate, how can there be a gate but no gate? How can there be no gate but a gate? So that's some of the Zen approach to non-dualistic thinking, because it phrased like that, at least in my experience, it forces the mind to think differently and to say that something could be there or not be there at the same time. So I think about, you know, as an example, a door is open, but if someone, say, has a phobia, you know, they're scared of dealing with people. So the door is wide open, but that person is not going outside because they're scared. So there's no gate there. There's nothing blocking the door, but there is a gate. Similarly with the personal space, someone has a hearing problem or a vision problem. Well, the eyes are open. There's nothing blocking the eyes, but there is. There's some consciousness or some level that is blocking the vision or the hearing. And so there is a gate, but there's no gate. So that's a brief example. Everything in this is going to be brief because it's a 244-page book with 163 footnotes. So a lot of research went into the book, a lot of looking at the origins of how the book, literally the book, which started off with the Bible, came to North America, which Native peoples, the original peoples, call Turtle Island for long thousands of years before the terrible two that I would call the U.S. only been, you know, 1776 or so. So it's a book also looks at that gate, how the what I call empire stormed and barged through the gate to these lands, and the consciousness of the book began to mess with people's minds. And so that got into looking at some of the history of the if the book came over here, then there was words in the book, and if there's words in the book, there's alphabets, and if there's alphabets, there's letters. So where did the letters come from? So that's got into some more research about the origins of letters, some going back to Hebrew and Phoenician. And then also a key turning point was 1450s with Gutenberg's invention of the printing press and movable type. there had been printing before, but Gutenberg's press put the consciousness and the book into a mechanized form, and was actually like the we've all heard of Henry Ford in the early 1900s, and with the assembly line starting the cars. And now look where we're at now with the vehicles. The world is dominated, at least U.S. dominated by vehicles, vehicle commercials, gasoline, energy. That's the dominant lube of the culture. And so before that was the consciousness of the book consciousness, where, as Marshall McLuhan explains in his excellent book, The Gutenberg Galaxy, how the printing press and the movable type began the mechanization of consciousness, that the letters were like assembly line. It's like an assembly line of letters, if you can follow that kind of metaphor, that we began to kind of market and commodify books and knowledge and information. So the Bible is a key point in that sort of spreading of mass-enforced, mass-persuasive consciousness, which I equate then now that has morphed into the modern media. And then also you look institutionally, education is ruled by the book. If you go through all the classes and do this and do that and study, you become a man of letters, or a woman of letters. And then the legal system is by the letter of the law, and religion, at least Christianity, is by the word of God. That's like one of the first things there. The word of God was the first thing. So all these things can have positive, you know, you can get a good education, you can be comforted by your religion, you can, a law case can put a criminal in jail, but some of what my book is going for is to look past these restrictions of consciousness that have been placed upon the world and society by rotely following all these things without being relating and interrelated with actual world. So I get into talking about what I call, what sort of a phrase that from books about and study of Zen is direct experience. The actual experience, when you actually touch and feel and smell something, it's very sensory. You can read about tomatoes, but when you get out there and rub your fingers on a tomato leaf, I don't think I've ever read a book anybody told me to rub my fingers on the green leaf of the tomato, but that smell is amazing. How did I learn that? Just by growing tomatoes and saying, whoa, what does this look like, what does this taste like? And then I saw cardinals in the autumn time nibbling on the leaves, so there must be something in the leaves. But you know, look up tomatoes, I don't know if it says that, but that's some of the why the book is trying to be something. That's why I say it's like a book, but it's not a book. Thus I had started with the title The Bookless Book, but that just sounded a little too kitschy. So there's a lot of flavors to it, and also an emphasis on, or a pointing towards, native peoples, original peoples, because they, among others, their cultures and traditions go back, way back before the book culture. And another thing that prompted my research was hearing from a Lakota friend who has a wonderful radio show, First Voices Radio, Teokasin Ghost Horse. He had mentioned in a talk, I heard him say that in the Lakota language, that they don't, and maybe other indigenous languages, they don't need A to Z. They don't have A to Z, meaning the alphabet. So their consciousness, the consciousness of these cultures and other than English languages, are beyond this alphabet consciousness. So that's some of the background of what fascinated me about the topic and wanting to try to put all that in a book, ironically, in a book to pull away the veils, or the wool, pull away the wool from the eyes of the societies and institutions that, in my view, this is part of what has led to the climate crisis and the destruction of the trees and the plants from whence we use paper to make books. So, why everybody is talking about we need to preserve the forests and we need to preserve the trees. They, even just simply preserving the trees, would help with the carbon dioxide and all that sciencey stuff that I don't know much about. But hence, Hence the title again, moving through the empty gate forest, as it's like a sort of a where the self-help others comes in, is like, I intend this book as a kind of guidebook for how to move through life, how to move through gates that are either in your own consciousness, or sometimes the gates are enforced. Like enforced gates are the huge amount of black people in prisons, natives on reservations. Those have been enforced by the empire. Those are not natural gates. And then also some of the book gets into trying to steer people towards finding their own personal liberation, what I call serene ecstatic function, which is that each of us is here with this earth for a particular purpose or a particular function that we do, something innately that one does, that is their kind of service that gives joy to oneself and is a help to others. And doing that and living that is what I call in the book having a path. So the path is kind of how you do your thing in the world, in life. And that in some essence is how there's the moving through the empty gate forest. And this is both an individual and a collective thing, because now we are all affected by climate chaos. We are all affected by the viruses going around. It is affecting the mass consciousness of the world. So while this is a personal thing, it's also, there's a collective thing going on about how is humanity moving through these gates, and can we survive? Basically, it's along those levels in a lot of ways. So that's why the call to really point the reader to reconnect, re-explore, make time to listen to the wind, talk with the water. Touch the earth, literally touch the earth, feel the sunlight that energizes us. There's even a Buddhist mudra, which is a pose of when the Buddha was challenged before he attained enlightenment. He put one hand on the earth to say, "The earth is my witness." So there's these flavors throughout different cultures that are also in the book to show that in various traditions, there's a similar kind of message of connecting with the earth and being guided by spiritual energies and being guided by one's intuition and getting outside or getting past or beyond, however you word it, this repressive history of empires and Nazism. And there's some bits in the book about eugenics and these ways that look at humanity as certain people fit in and certain people don't. Certain people are misfits and certain people aren't. And also that those tend to be destructive of the natural world, the natural environment. So some people referred to the book as a very slow read and a reread and a kind of meditative study, which is part of the intention was to get the reader to study it. So it's not a quick read. It is a storyline of history and consciousness, but it's not meant as like a whatever they call a good summer read, even though of course I would hope people read it in the summertime. But it's meant to be more for people who really want to pause and think about what's going on and apply that to their lives and to the world around them. And I could go on and on, but that's why I wrote the book. So I hope you'll be interested and have a look. And so a map in the book, which I was gracious to be able to use from a map maker, that shows the original nations of what is now called the United States. That before 1492 and Columbus got here, there were 6,000 nations. So the map was a mind blower to me to realize, what I grew up in, the United States of America and 50 states, that there's a whole level of consciousness and a whole physical, spiritual reality that has been going on here for thousands and thousands of years. So that's also, as well as pointing people and the reader towards, what we call nature and touch a tree and take a walk and all that, is also the respect for that whatever path you're on, is that you honor and respect the land that you're on, as the original inhabitants have been here for thousands and thousands of years, and And sort of in a nutshell, the way I look at it is that either you are on a path or with a path in life, or you are encouraging or participating in sociopathological behavior. The sociopathological is destructive, and the path is a way of balance and blessing and getting along with whomever. And also some of my brush calligraphy of ancient Chinese pictographs that explain some of the stuff, some of the topics I talked about. And there's also photos from several people I know, and also other photos. So there's about 60 images. I wanted it to be not just literary and words, because that's very mental, but have the pictures to reflect what's going on. And ultimately, the star of the book is the copper beech tree, whose photo graces the cover, one of the guiding lights of the book. So thank you very much for listening, and the book's available at my website. $22.50 covers the shipping, and $19 in person. Anybody looking for more than one, please contact me, for rates are outside the U.S. is ridiculous. Like, it costs $20 to $30 to mail a book outside the U.S. So I also offer the PDF version for $15. And I have some events coming up. You can contact me. And thanks for listening. Blessings with your journey.